Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, January 16th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Okay, fine. I am trying not to break out in a 90s rap battle style description of how I'm doing based, inspired by Valley of the Boom, which is a terrific show and everybody should watch it.
Now, I'm a little disappointed that you succeeded because I wish you had failed and actually done that. That would have been pretty great.
Do you?
I do. You know I do. Now, whether or not anybody else agrees with me is another story. But yes, I think it would have been great. Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Well, I can't sing, so I'll just talk.
Okay, that works for me. So, Brian, you are here to talk to us today about this video that we saw, that you've discovered on YouTube, of an IBM PC. Like not like the generic word for a machine what runs Windows, but an actual manufactured by IBM computer made out of all of the steel and everything that has been unboxed, air quote, live on YouTube. Like, this guy opened this box that's never been opened before, opened this computer for the first time, set everything up, and got it up and running.
Yeah, it's a IBM PC-AT. Mm-hmm. Manufactured in 1988. It's a 1984 model, but it's a 1988 version of that model, because there was, you know, probably small tweaks to it in that time. Actually, I don't even know if that's the case. Anyway, yeah, so credit where it's due. I didn't discover it. It was posted in one of John Keats' chat groups that I'm involved in, much to my chagrin sometimes, but that's another story. And it's also, it's from a year ago.
Okay.
No, almost two years ago, March of 2017. So it's not that it's new. The thing that struck me is, like, I'm watching it, and the guy is like super duper geeky and super excited about having this brand new 30 year old machine to open, and he's super stoked about the keyboard. It seems like he feels the same way about that keyboard that many Mac people feel about the carrier.
Apple Extended 2 keyboard.
Yes. Andrew, you can ask your grandparents about that one. And
Apple desktop bus, baby, look it up.
That's right.
Now, to be fair, I have typed on that IBM keyboard in the past, and it is a fantastic keyboard. It's very satisfying.
It's no aircraft carrier.
It's not, but it is a satisfying keyboard to type on, especially compared to what we get today. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, and he keeps sticking his nose into the keys. And like,
it smells like a new car.
It smells like a new car. Yeah, it's a pretty good video. It's too long. It's 30 minutes long.
Well,
it's 30 minutes long.
It's not. That's not just him taking everything out of the box, though, to be fair.
He sets it up.
He does all of the setup and everything.
And you know, software installs and whatnot. I watched most of it straight through. I think I'm actually still sitting at 29 minutes and 52 seconds with the intention of finishing the last 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. But the thing that sort of struck me, and I think it was about the, I'm going to write this up as a cool stuff found, and I'll figure out the exact timestamp. But it was at about the 13, 14 minute mark where it suddenly occurred to me that, holy crap, this is like everything that Steve Jobs saved us from.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm talking specifically about like the boxing and unboxing experience. I'm not talking about the technology so much.
Right.
And what I mean, and I'm talking very specifically about the iMac, the very first iMac, and how it was you know, so simple to pull out of the box. Mm-hmm. And there was the Jeff Goldblum.
There's no step three.
There's no step three. The commercial that they did. Mm-hmm. for the ease of setup, and believe it or not, it was once upon a time a kind of controversial thing that the box didn't come with a manual.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We take all of this stuff for granted now. Like a lot of companies do packaging well these days, or at least what we consider well in 1988. Excuse me. What's this year?
This is 2019.
Right. A lot of people do packaging well because they've learned these lessons from Apple.
Go ahead.
I've certainly opened packaging that is good, but there was a time when it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that the packaging has sort of become part of the consumer experience that people talk about. Like, people used to sort of not care what the packaging was like, because it was not going to be great. It was always kind of ugly. It was going to be a pain in the neck, whatever. And now, like, when you hear about a product, you know, if there's some sort of hurdle or it doesn't look nice or whatever it is, you will hear from people like, and the packaging was terrible. You know, getting this thing out of the box was a disaster area or whatever. And finding out that has become a normal part of the conversation, you know, most of that comes from Apple, because, like, I mean, I have boxes for a lot of gear I have, and I've held on to an awful lot of gear. And looking at how it's...
Excuse me. Sorry, I had a little cough.
No, not like that. If I get rid of the thing, I have to get rid of the box that goes with it. But, like, I still have the original box to my 5th-gen iPod Video, for example. And it's not much more box than the actual iPod itself was. And the box that my laptop came in is, you know, not much. Like, it's interesting. I was looking at the box for the previous laptop I had, and then the one that I had gotten recently when I got the machine I have now. And the packaging has gotten even smaller. And I remember when I first got that old one, you know, wow, they've really got the packaging narrowed down and lean and mean on this. And, you know, and then the next computer I got was even small. The packaging was even smaller, and it was still a 13-inch MacBook Pro. So, you know, they're always looking for ways to refine that. And I think that it's interesting that it's become part of the conversation in large part because of Apple. But I also think it's interesting to see an example of what it was like when that didn't seem to matter. And that's what this video is. Like, it's just an object lesson in here's what happens when nobody cares about the packaging.
Well, that's not the video maker's point.
No, it's not at all. It's like, just, I mean, it's a thing that you notice.
Is delving into the past and adding to his collection of vintage PCs, which, you know, more power to him. There's plenty of people who collect Macs. I would rather collect. Anyway, that's a value judgment for another day. Here's the thing, though. The iMac was shipped in 97, right? 21 years ago?
That sounds about right, yeah.
97 or 98. I forget now. If only we had some kind of way where we could connect to some kind of like a collection of information and find that out. But that was roughly 20 or 21 years ago.
Uh-huh. Did you have one?
The thing is, the original? No.
The original.
I had, I did end up getting
the Bondi
for a while.
The Bondi Mac?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a DV.
A touchscreen one from another company. That's beside the point. the my point is that the difference between when this PC was packed. Oh, we should explain. He bought it off of eBay from someone who has access to a warehouse full of these things. So this is corporate stock, probably from that was intended for a reseller because it hadn't been set up for an end user yet. And this was still at an age when this box would have been shipped to a retailer, and the retailer would have set it up, and the retailer would have, you know, put in the final stuff and maybe installed software on it too. It's a different age, and the difference between that device being packaged 1988 and the iMac being shipped was only 10 years.
Yeah, that was 1998.
And it's been 20 years since then. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, that 20-year history since the iMac shipped is really sort of like still now. But just the 10 years before that looks antiquated, ancient, and weird. Mm-hmm. And I personally find that interesting.
Well, and it is. Andrew, did you have an old school iMac? I guess we call them old school.
I did not.
I had the DV when they started coming in the fruit flavors instead of just the ocean color. And I remember the same thing after There's No Step 3, you know, buying mine and bringing it home. And the thing that caused me the thing that was the hurdle when I went to set it up was I took everything out of the box and I was getting ready to plug it all in and have it all ready to go. And Mr. Kelly took off with the mouse and like wouldn't give it back. And so that was the reason it took as long as it took for me to set it up. Otherwise, it would have taken basically no time at all.
No, he wanted it, or was he wanting to like smash it because it was so terrible?
Well, mostly he was trying to figure out like how does it work? It's round and sort of weird. And what does, you know, how does it actually do anything and all that kind of stuff. And so while he was sort of puzzling over that, I was spending, you know, I was getting everything plugged in and then couldn't get it back from him because he's, but I don't understand how it works. But what I remember about it was, already being an Apple user, I didn't really have to know anything. Like I just plugged it all in and then it walked me through everything. And so when it got ready, when it was ready to go, it wasn't weird. And then I was able to go, you know, watch A Bug's Life on my computer, which at the time was revolutionary. With that DVD like drive.
A couple of years before the iMac shipped with its revolutionary approach to packaging and its like incredibly successful transition from Apple competing on the basis of specs and or price and competing on fashion. Mm-hmm. And only 3 years before that, I had bought my first the first Mac that I actually owned. I was a Kinko's Mac user before that. Mm-hmm. Was in 1995, and it was a power computing device. And the power computing device not only shipped with a power computing manual for the computer for the Mac clone, mm-hmm. it also shipped with Mac OS 7.6 for Dummies by Bob Levitis. and my point is that like what you're seeing in this PC unboxing video remained that way for the next 10 years.
Uh-huh.
That and Apple was doing the same thing. I owned two, speaking of hoarders, I owned two 20th anniversary Macs,
mm-hmm.
the TAMs.
Yep.
And that packaging was rather remarkable, and it still came with like 8 boxes or 6 boxes or 5 boxes or something inside the one big box.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a step up in packaging. And so, I mean, it's just like we take this for granted today. And the only reason we take it for granted today is because Steve Jobs insisted that it be different and essentially changed the entire world mm-hmm. when it comes to product packaging.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
It is. And what's interesting, what was most interesting to me about that is that it's across everything. So, you know, somebody unboxing, like I remember somebody unboxing, I think it was whatever the latest iteration of the Xbox is, and talking about the packaging. And people talk about it like with cameras and things. And so like across many different sorts of varieties of consumer goods, packaging has changed and evolved over time to be a little less bulky, a little easier to get into, and a little easier to manage. Like if you're trying to, you know, to get everything out and get it all set up. So the other thing that struck me about this video in particular is the amount of stuff that he had to do to go from zero to computer. Like, I think I've seen IKEA furniture that doesn't have as much assembly as what this computer did. And so just watching and knowing that wasn't something that an end user person was supposed to be doing. I know that. But knowing that there was somewhere, you know, that this was what like IT people had to do in order to set these things up to give them to customers or whatever. Just the number of steps that was. And it did make me think back to the first couple of computers I owned, which was a PowerBook 1400 and then that iMac DV, and how easy it was for me to go from I brought home a box to I have a computer, and how short an amount of time that was. And so that was another thing that struck me about this video.
Yeah, I'm watching it right now, and he's at the part where it's fully booted. Now mm-hmm. he's configuring the software, and it looks like it has to like figure out what keyboard it has.
Uh-huh.
Like there's an on-screen prompt that says, which key do you have? Press this button to choose.
Yeah, what shape is your inner key? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and then he also had to not just format the hard drive. He had to, because it came with a 30 meg hard drive, which was pretty astounding. And
yeah, oh, wait,
is that astounding in 88?
It was very good.
Yeah, I think it was at least very good. And he didn't know. He not only had to format it, I think he had to like
install like, DOS or something too.
It had to make sectors.
Oh, geez.
And the formatting. And yeah, and they did have to install everything. But again, that's because the box was intended for that middleman.
Right.
The middleman who actually, whose job it was to set the stuff up for the customer.
Right. Yeah.
But and he also had to find a key. It came with one of those
vending
machine style keys to be able to unlock the case.
Uh-huh.
Because the case shipped locked. It also shipped with the cardboard sleeve in the floppy drive. Steve Jobs saved us from floppy drives too. And it was the 5 1/4 inch floppy drive, and it had a cardboard insert so mm-hmm. that the heads didn't bang together.
So they don't crash, yeah.
And you had to park the hard drive so that the heads and the platter didn't bang. And he goes through all this. It's a very, very thorough video.
The guy, just wait till you get to the chanting.
His vintage PCs.
Yeah. The chanting was interesting to me. yeah. I might be kidding. You'll have to go watch the video and see. what I would like to do now is tell you all a little bit about our sponsors. Our first sponsor today is Eve Home. Eve Energy, sorry, from Eve Home. And everything about Eve Energy says that you are in control. You can switch your appliances on and off with a tap or with a voice command to a voice assistant, whichever one you prefer. You can automate some of that stuff so you don't even have to turn it on and off because you can just use a timer. And you can also monitor how much power those things are using while they're actually running. You can take advantage of HomeKit, set everything up very easily, get it all ready to go in no time at all. And remember, because it's HomeKit, all of that stuff is super secure. And it also will connect directly to your iPhone or iPad using Bluetooth Low Energy, so you don't even need a bridge. And one of the great things about that is it doesn't matter where you are. You're able to monitor and manage whatever you have set up with Eve Energy all very easily. Your lights, your humidifier, your coffee maker, having those things turn on and off automatically is always really, really great. And you can even have some of those things respond to occupancy so that it sets everything to only be on when there's somebody there to enjoy it. So those are all really great reasons why Eve Energy is a good idea. And you can find out more about Eve Energy at evehome.com. That's EveHome.com. Our other sponsor today is Capterra, and Capterra is the leading online resource totally free that helps you find the best software solution for your business. There are over 700,000 reviews of products from actual software users, and you can find what you need because there are over 700 specific categories you can use to make a decision. Everything from product management, project management, to email marketing, all the way down to the very specific yoga studio management software. No matter what kind of software solution you're looking for, Capterra can help you find it. If you go to capterra.com/TDO, you can find out for free right now. Go get the new tools that will make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra is CAPTERRA.com/TDO. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk to you all about today, Andrew, you had written up a piece about interpreting Apple Watch heart rate data.
Yeah, so I linked to this piece by Lifehacker. They mm-hmm. had a great article on basically just explaining the different kinds of heart rates in case someone who has an Apple Watch does that heart rate app and they see a number like 70 or 80 and they're trying to figure out, well, what does that mean? Is that good or bad?
Mm-hmm.
So there are different kinds of heart rates that they go over. The first one is what's called a resting heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
And like the name suggests, it's just your heart rate when you're not doing anything, mm-hmm. like when you're sleeping or just sitting on the couch. One thing to keep in mind is that if you're an athletic person, your resting heart rate will be lower than average. But that's a good thing because it means your heart is strong and it doesn't need to pump as much per minute.
Mm-hmm.
So the normal range for that could be anywhere from 60 to 80 beats per minute.
Okay.
And if as a person, it could be lower, like maybe between 40 and 50.
Mm-hmm.
And then another heart rate to keep in mind is the walking average. So that's when you're walking around. And the normal range for that is usually in the 70s to 90s. If you're walking fast, that might be higher, around the 110 to 120 range. I mean, everyone is different, of course, but these are just in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the things that always comes up when you start talking about heart rate data, whether it's your Apple Watch recording it or you go to the doctor and get some sort of test. Everybody's is a little different. And what's considered normal, there's a pretty wide range. So you don't have to worry if you see that this number is a little higher or a little lower, at least in general. You know, that could still be a completely normal reading for you and your body type or your activity level or, you know, your lifestyle, whatever that might be. So that's one of the things that I know happens a lot. Because, whenever you go to a doctor and have some sort of test or something, you know, it's always a matter of being within the range of normal. So,
yep. So the final one is called your workout heart rate. And of course, it depends on what workout you're doing and, you know, how vigorous it is. Mm-hmm. If you're like running, biking, lifting weights, at that point, a normal heart rate could be anywhere between 160 to maybe even over 200.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the article notes that the heart rate range that the Apple Watch can measure. Let me see if I can find that.
Okay.
I think the maximum limit might be somewhere in the 200s.
Wow. That's an awful lot. That's an awful lot of work that your heart is doing.
Yeah, I think that if anyone's hitting that 200 mark, there may be it may not be necessary to measure faster than that.
Yeah, I feel like at that point you have something bigger to worry about than how high your Apple Watch can monitor your heart rate. I do like one thing that they point out in this article, which is in bold near the beginning, and it says, if you're concerned that something is genuinely wrong with you, stop Googling heart rate stats and talk to a health professional. And the thing that's interesting to me about that is that everything you read tells you that. Like anything that you read that talks about how to take the ECG if you have a series 4 and what to do with the information that you have in all these different ways. And all of them say, like, if this is a legitimate concern for you, you should talk to somebody. And then you always get, and then, you know, I think a couple of times now we've had sort of the wave of articles from people going, you know, but now emergency rooms are going to be overrun with everybody who thinks that their watch is telling them they're going to die, you know, or whatever. And so the tension between those, I think, is kind of interesting. But I did like seeing that somebody sort of broke this down and, like, you know, here's, you know, like that normal is a very, very wide range and that there's different things that you can use sort of as basic measures, you know, to make sure that whatever information you're getting from your watch is actually useful. And one of the things I think is probably good, you know, like we've talked about this before on the show, is being able to, you know, being armed with a little bit more information.
Yeah. So I found it. It says the heart rate sensor can only detect readings between 30 and 210 beats per minute. And of course, that also depends on your age. If you're a young whippersnapper like me, a reading of 210, while that sounds high, it may not be a huge big of a deal unless you start seeing other symptoms. But once you start getting older, then that might be some cause for concern.
Yeah. So, And I did like seeing some of the screenshots of what you can find out with the heart rate information. Like there's one there that shows resting. There's one, you know, it shows what your workout, what some of the workout information is on these. And it's nice to see some of that and see somebody dig in, you know, to give you more information about how that's supposed to work. So does this help you out, Brian? I know you have a Series 4 watch.
It does. Does it mean that I'm going to get out and exercise more? You're breaking up.
Brian's going through a tunnel.
Exactly.
Well, what I liked was having something to go on. Like, and I think that that's a thing that only helps. You know, we've talked about like erring on the side of information, being armed with some of that data. And so finding out like, yeah, by and large, like this is consistently higher, you know, on the high end of normal. Like the next time you go to the doctor, maybe you just bring that up and that's a thing that you can discuss. And, you know, if that's an indicator of something else that's happening, you know, that taken in conjunction with a few other things may help you get diagnosed with something that, you know, maybe you wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. And, you know, finding out that there's something wrong with you that's easily solvable, you know, and that you have all this information to help you do it doesn't seem like a bad thing to me. So,
yeah, I don't think there's such a thing as too much data. I think that's always a good thing.
Yeah, especially because if you're armed with that data and you're armed with an article like this piece at Lifehacker that helps you understand what some of that is, or, you know, like sort of where you fall along a spectrum, that's super helpful, you know, and having that data, I think, is always kind of interesting. So I'm into it. So I was really glad to see that this popped up because I thought it was an interesting, it was interesting to see interpretation. And it also does recommend, I think, a couple of apps that you can use to check that, to see how you stack up. I think there was something that,
They do mention an app called Zones, mm-hmm. which can calculate your exercise as a percentage of your maximum heart rate.
Okay.
And it can color code your workouts by effort level, too.
Okay. So if you're working extra hard or if you're just walking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to make it easier to parse through visually, I think.
Yeah. And it's also sometimes nice to see, you know, how much effort you're actually expending on some of that stuff. Cause sometimes, you know, if you're just like, if you just go running, you don't always know like how that compares to if you, you know, the running you did yesterday or, you know, a week ago or that competition, you know, where you went and ran in a 5K and compete against other people or something. So I can see where that would mm-hmm. be something that it would be really nice to have. So excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining me, you two. Brian, thanks. I hope your house is out of the tunnel now. Thanks for joining me.
Yes, it is. It's coming in loud and clear. And thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. And if you have any comments about heart rate data or if you want to talk to us about unboxing, you can leave comments in the show notes. You can get a hold of us on Twitter at TMO Daily, and you can also email us if you prefer the old fashioned way. And you can do that at observations@macobserver.com. This has been the Daily Observations Podcast for January 16th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to you tomorrow. Until then, be excellent to each other.